You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto, and we are glad you're joining us today. By we, I mean myself and Art Factora. How are you doing, Art?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to be back in Vancouver. I've been on the road a lot.
Balmy Vancouver?
Been on the road a lot lately. Yeah,
I know that.
Yeah, Southern Ontario seems to be calling. It's, been back a lot. We've got a great show lined up. We've got Matt Hartley coming on the show. It's going to be in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking about all things BlackBerry related. Plus, he's also really quite an expert on the whole gaming market. So we're going to talk about the new console game, the new PlayStation 4, which has just been announced. Are you excited about that?
I'm not a huge gamer, but did I tell you that when I was in Vegas, I won that the handheld Nintendo DS?
Oh, you did. That's right. You mentioned it in an email. You won it in a mall?
In a mall, yeah. You know those, kind of the same idea is that those machines where you see the clamp when they get the stuffed toys?
Yeah.
Well, there was one of those types of machines at the mall just outside of Vegas, but you had to use a joystick and a button to get this key into this tiny keyhole. And I thought it was a scam, but I had some time to kill. My girlfriend was in the bathroom. And $5 later, a $170 gaming device fell through the box.
Are you playing with it or are you selling it on eBay?
I'm going to sell it. I'm going to return.
Craigslist.
Yeah.
That's a way to do it. Craigslist is awesome.
I was 15 years ago, I would have kept that thing and it would have entertained me.
Now you'd rather have the money.
I think so.
Yeah, good man.
That's age.
That's good. I've got a pro. Let me finish off the rundown for the show. After Matt, we have Julian Saunders. We're going to be talking Microsoft Surface. I'm kind of getting excited about the Surface. I think it's kind of cool. It's cooler than I thought it was when I first saw it, and there's some reasons, and Julian will explain. And then there's been this email exploit going on. I don't know if you've noticed and gotten some strange emails from some of your friends that looks like they might have a virus. And it's not really widespread. It's not huge, but it's enough to cause some concern, and it's kind of unique. So I got David Hathaway on. He's going to come on at the end of today, and we'll chat about that. I didn't let him sit in my chair this time.
I'm starting to get text message spam, which is very annoying.
Yes. Yeah, I'm wondering about the legality of it, because there's a law in Canada preventing us from preventing advertisers from offloading costs on consumers. And it all started with the spam faxes that used to be so prevalent back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea there was an advertiser sends you a fax, and then he's imparting costs upon you by sending the fax to you, because it's your consumables.
Oh, right.
The fact that texting does cost the receiver money, camera costs the receiver money depending on their plan, that means the same sort of thing is happening. So I'm actually surprised that we are getting very much of it. And we're getting it from some mainstream companies. And I don't know if I signed up and agreed to it, but I get some from AirMiles. They're one group that I get some from.
I had one recently from a girl, and somebody, it wasn't just me, because I saw someone else tweeted out a picture of their phone with the message. It said, "Hey, my name's Ashley. Do you want to be friends? Click on this link with your smartphone and I'll show you how to meet me." I was like, what?
Yeah.
Didn't seem right.
So when you clicked on the link, what happened?
I became friends with her.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
So it sometimes spam works out.
It was
usually
happy.
It doesn't.
And now she went to Vegas with you. It has been far too long since we last heard the dulcet tones of Matt Hartley, the Toronto-based writer who pens his prose for the National Post. Oh, my goodness. I sounded almost articulate in the intro. How are you doing, Matt?
Very well. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing just great. Now, you're in Toronto, right? And so from following your tweets, you're a huge baseball fan, are you not?
Oh, yeah. Big Blue Jays fan. Have been since I was a kid.
Oh, okay. So you've got to be excited. Now, my son's a big baseball fan, too, and he's really excited about what's happening with the Blue Jays. Are they gonna like, return to the glory days of the 90s?
Oh, I'm really trying not to get my hopes up, because everything is looking really great. Lots of great off-season moves, new pitchers, new shortstop, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I've been fooled before. This is the best team that we've seen in Toronto for a long time. So, fingers crossed. Hopefully it's a good season.
Well, you're talking to a Canucks fan here, so I know all about disappointment. So let's.
Me too. I got both Sedins in my hockey pool. I know.
Oh, well, they're starting to score now. They've picked it up the last 9 games. They're over a point a game clip each. So you'll be okay. maybe not be able to make up much ground in a shortened season, though. But I digress. This isn't a sports show, although it could be. Maybe we should make it one. Now, I was out to Toronto a couple of weeks ago for the BlackBerry event, but I didn't see you there. Did you cover it?
I did. We were in New York. We sent one of our reporters to the event in Toronto, which is obviously where BlackBerry kind of had their signature Canadian event. And then I was in New York, which was the sort of global hub, where that was where Torsten Hines was, the CEO, and Mike Lazaridis, the co-founder, was in New York. And that's where Alicia Keys, the new global creative director, made
yes.
BlackBerry debut as well. So, yeah, I was in New York. It was a short trip. Wish I could have spent more time there, but it was a pretty interesting event.
Now, I thought that they did overall, I would give them a solid B on the event. There was an Apple quality as far as the event, but they didn't have a presenter like Apple traditionally has for the sort of event. You know, and I've got some, I had a few little, you know, production issues with them. Being from the television industry, I can't believe that they had a teleprompter in the base of the stage for Torsten to look down at all the time, which meant that he was never making eye contact, which just drove me crazy through the whole thing. I was like, give him a clear teleprompter and he can have him looking out. But the event itself about the technology, I've been playing with a BlackBerry 10 for the last couple of weeks since, and I'm really impressed with how they were able to step up and create a really unique operating system.
Oh, I totally agree. It's BlackBerry 10 is an impressive piece of software. The people that I know who are using it, for the most part, seem to be pretty impressed. A lot of them are former or are existing BlackBerry users. People I know who have been using either a Torch or a Bold or something, and now they've upgraded to the Z10. And that was what I was saying when I had seen the device and sort of before it launched, was that if you're a BlackBerry fan and you've been waiting for a new device, that you're going to be pretty impressed with the Z10 because it is, as you said, it is a really nice piece of software. And it's well laid out, and there's a lot of good ideas that have gone into it.
Yeah. Now, is it enough? I think that, first of all, is it enough to stem the tide? Is it enough for people who are using BlackBerry to decide they're going to stay with BlackBerry? And let's start with the end users, the people who are on the Bold, the people who are on the Torch. And are they going to be able to, are they going to, when the time comes for them to renew their contracts, are they going to stay on BlackBerry, or do you think it'll stand up against the iPhone and especially the new Samsung products?
I think it's going to be enough. And when I say it, I mean BlackBerry 10. So that'll combine both the Z10 touchscreen device and the Q10 QWERTY device, which we're probably going to see in a couple of months. I think between the two of them, your RIM, or BlackBerry as I should say now, is going to be able to maintain most of its users. I think the people who like BlackBerry, BlackBerry fans, are going to like the new devices. I think there's enough there for them. The browser's improved enough. The typing experience is better. You get to keep your BlackBerry Messenger options. The video store is better. All of that stuff. I mean, this is a company that needs to continue to put new things into the BlackBerry app world, or I guess it's just called BlackBerry world now. You know, there's still kind of holes in there.
Yes.
You know, there's still no Netflix. There's still no Instagram. There's certain, you know, high-profile applications that BlackBerry really needs to get on the platform.
Starbucks.
Starbucks again, yeah. But I think if you're an existing BlackBerry user and you've been sort of laboring with your Torch or your Bold or whatever, or your Curve, and you're dying for your IT department to upgrade to the next generation, I think when you get a Q10 or a Z10 in your hand, you're going to be pretty impressed.
So now that is survival as far as BlackBerry is concerned. They have to maintain that base, and hopefully the enterprise side is going to see the story the same way with the new Bez 10, with their new enterprise solution. And so that is kind of takes the executioner's sword away from BlackBerry. But for them to really thrive, they have to start clawing back the people who were on BlackBerry, and they have to get some converts coming from the iPhone or from the Android. Do you think that there's enough there for that to happen?
That's really that's the million-dollar question here. Is BlackBerry 10 enough to turn heads among the iPhone and Android crowd to get them to come to either take a look at BlackBerry for the first time, or in the case of people who maybe defected from BlackBerry, went to another smartphone platform, whether or not it's going to be enough to drive them back? I think it's probably going to be impressive for some people who are maybe looking for a better experience with a keyboard. They may come back You know, there are people out there who have grown tired of certain aspects of the other platforms, but at the same time, you know, we do need to keep it in perspective. I mean, the iPhone is still selling millions of units every quarter, despite whatever's going on with Apple stock. Mm-hmm. I mean, Apple is a force to be reckoned with. And now you've got Samsung out there who is not only targeting consumers and being the biggest mobile phone seller on the planet, but now, you know, this week they've announced some moves at Mobile World Congress to squarely aim themselves at the business market as well. So Samsung's going to be a big challenge for BlackBerry as well. And, you know, we're widely, you know, we're all expecting to see a new Samsung Galaxy device probably sooner rather than later. You know, it would be very strange if Apple didn't launch at least one new iPhone this year. So I think, you know, we're not going to get a really good idea as to how well RIM is doing until, you know, maybe a one or two quarters in to this new strategy. RIM's going to report their earnings, I think, in March is the next time that's due. So you'll get a little bit of the sales of BlackBerry 10. That'll give us some early indications of how it's doing. But we're really not going to get a good idea as to how well this platform is doing until maybe June or even September, once the devices have been in the market for a couple of months and once they've launched in the, you know, all-important U.S. market.
It's interesting that you brought up Samsung as the real, you know, in a lot of ways, the closest competitor to BlackBerry as they move ahead. They've just announced, I think the product that you're talking about or the inference you're making is they have this new Knox system, which is their... It sounds to me from the initial descriptions, and they're actually coming through on a road trip. I'm going to see it in a couple of weeks. It sounds to me like it's very much BlackBerry balance, the idea of combining both your work and your home life on one phone and siloing each.
Yeah, and that's how I understand it as well. One of my reporters had a chance to be briefed on it last week, and that's essentially the idea. So the idea is that you can have a device that is a work device, and then you can switch it over to becoming a personal device, and the two profiles don't mix. You can't share information between the two. So when it's in work mode, it can be safely protected by your IT department. You know, the CIOs are happy with the platform that way. They like it better. And then, you know, then when you switch over to a personal profile, you can have all of your own stuff, your own photos, your own applications, that kind of thing. Really good for people who maybe manage, you know, a Twitter account for a brand and at the same time have their own Twitter presence. You can have them in different pockets, which works a lot better. It's interesting because, you know, obviously this bring your own device trend has been a big thing over the last couple of years as people want to bring the device that they love into the corporate environment. And I think you're going to see, you know, clearly BlackBerry is onto something with balance. Because you've got some of their competitors following suit that, you know, there needs to be some kind of a solution so that the companies feel protected, even though they're sort of, you know, going with their employees' demands to use their own devices on the network.
In a lot of ways, this Samsung rollout is complete validation for BlackBerry with balance.
I think that's one way of looking at it, absolutely. And I mean, at the same time, you got to, you know, Samsung doesn't have, as much as everybody talks about the Galaxy S3 or whatever, I mean, this is a company that's got, you know, the sort of the phablets, the half phone, half tablet devices, you know, the Galaxy Notes and all that kind of stuff. There's a wide range of Samsung devices in it. I mean, that's a really big company that understands supply chains, that can get a lot of product out into the world really quickly. So, you know, the more Samsung takes aim at BlackBerry, the sort of the hotter the fire is going to burn in Waterloo.
Yes. Now, let's just talk briefly about the operating system itself. And now, were you an iPhone user? Is that your main platform? What is your main phone?
I cycle through devices. I was a BlackBerry user up until the fall. I've been using an iPhone since then, and I'll probably be cycling through to an Android device at some point. But I try to try everything.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of the same way, but I've kind of standardized on the iPhone for the last little while just because it seems much of a muchness when we jump from one to the other. But after using the BlackBerry for, I guess, 3 or 4 days that I'd lived on it, when I went back to my iPad or to my iPhone, I found the iOS operating system to be kind of clunky in comparison with the BlackBerry system, and it all comes down to BlackBerry Flow and Peak. The fact that you slide up to gather all your windows together and then pull your thumb across, which allows you to take a look at all of your messaging center behind. I find that to be a really elegant and kind of, it feels more modern now to me than the iOS or an Android device that I use.
That's one of the reviews that I've heard. One of the things I like to do with new devices is I put them in the hands of my beautiful wife, who is not a big techie person but loves her smartphone. It's the center of her world when it comes to Facebook and messaging and that kind of thing. So she's been using the Z10 for a little while, and there's a lot of it that she really likes. And there's other things about it that frustrate her, but it does seem as though with a lot of people that the more they use the BlackBerry 10 operating system and the more comfortable they get with things like the Flow and Peak and that, it starts to make more sense to them. And you're right, when you go back to the iOS system where you have to kind of go into an application, and when you want to come out, you have to go to something else, and when you want to go back in, and it does seem as though you're pulling yourself in and out of various things. It does seem as though the BlackBerry one is a bit of an update, but at the same time, I've heard complaints from people who find the new way of doing things in BlackBerry 10 to be, while it seems intuitive when you get the hang of it, getting the hang of it can be kind of difficult.
Yes, I can understand that, especially if you're not conscious of what state everything's in as you use it.
Yeah, and there's a lot about it that is, there's going to have to be tweaks to it. This is a new operating system that RIM's starting from the ground up, really. I remember being out in Waterloo prior to the launch, and one of the RIM executives told me, there's not a single line of code in BlackBerry 10 that was there in the BlackBerry OS. And when you do that, you're going to have bugs, you're going to have things that you're going to need to fix. And I think as BlackBerry 10 evolves, it'll likely become easier to pick up. As more people become comfortable with it, it might seem more intuitive. But we're so used to that, press a button on your, press
the home button,
dial on your phone, go into the application when you want, hit the home screen and come back out. I think some people are going to need a little bit of training to get used to something different. It's the same, one of the same complaints that people levied against Windows Phone.
Yes.
That the benefit of it is that it's different, and people like it because it's different, but people also don't like it because it's different.
Good point. Let's take a quick break, because you've been doing a lot of writing about the game and console world, and I'm way behind in that, so I'm counting on you to bring me up to speed. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better. Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Matt Hartley is the technology columnist or technology writer for the National Post, and we've just been discussing all things BlackBerry. And I wonder how long it's going to take us to stop calling them RIM.
I got news for you. It's still really, really difficult for me. It's probably I remember when Torsten Hines said we're now going to be called BlackBerry, and I was just like, okay, so now, I mean, being able to just say RIM versus BlackBerry is difficult, but when you start writing it and everything that BlackBerry does is also called BlackBerry, it's BlackBerry Messenger, it's BlackBerry Enterprise Server. The number of times you actually write the word BlackBerry in a story is unbelievable.
Yeah, and I keep thinking about the poor guys who have to fill out their email address now. They used to be able to say @rim.com. Now they have to type in all those letters. Their keyboard better be better. It better be better.
Okay.
Let's talk game stuff, because, boy, has the game console market ever been just moving in molasses for the last few years? It seems to me, at least compared to the PC and the mobility market. But finally, a new console, PlayStation 4, gets unveiled. Was it worth the wait?
It's a really good question, and you're right. It does seem as though they're, maybe the console makers were dragging their heels a little bit on this next generation. But I think part of that is due to the fact that normally a generation of video game consoles lasts roughly 5 years or so. This one seemed to last a little bit longer. You're into 5-7 years. And part of the reason for the length of this generation of console was the idea that like Sony brought out the Move and Microsoft brought out the Kinect, which enabled kind of new gaming ideas. And so you were able to kind of prolong the lifespan. But of course, last week we got the first, or I guess the second, really, because Nintendo brought out the Wii U in December, but this is the second big next-generation console. It's the PlayStation 4. It's going to come out later this year. We don't know when. We don't know how much it's going to cost. And we don't know what it looks like yet, but we know it's coming. And it's there's a lot of excitement built around this. There's a lot of things that have changed in the gaming world. This new console is built from the ground up to be a more social machine than its predecessors. You're going to be able to share things easily. You're going to be able to communicate with your friends in a different way than you had on past consoles. So, you know, I think we're looking at a brave new kind of gaming world in the next couple of years, and it's going to be very interesting to see what Sony has planned for the PlayStation 4, but then, of course, also what Microsoft has planned for whatever its next Xbox is going to be called.
So are the game console makers still trying to carve out a certain territory that is unique to them? And Nintendo's always been kind of off in their own space, at least since they've done the Wii. And Sony and Microsoft have seemed to compete kind of more for the mainstream hardcore gamer. Is that the way that this will the lines of battle will be drawn again?
I think to a certain extent, yes, but at the same time, I think you're starting to get a little bit of blurring in those lines. Microsoft is obviously going after that family segment of gamers that Nintendo tends to dominate with the Kinect. You get things like the Sesame Street games that Microsoft's been building and things like that that are really aimed at drawing in that younger audience, games like Dance Central, or Just Dance, in order to kind of focus on the female component of the market, those kinds of things. And at the same time, you've got a Nintendo with the Wii U targeting Call of Duty and zombie-based games and other kind of traditionally hardcore games with the Wii U. I think probably the bigger picture for this generation of consoles is going to be not just the games themselves, but how well these machines function as the kind of hub for the living room. The ability to watch MLB.com, to be able to watch NHL Game Center, to stream movies, to access Netflix, all of those things are going to be very important. And I think you're going to see, obviously, that's been a component of what Microsoft's been pushing with the Xbox and what PlayStation's been pushing with the PS3. But I think you're going to see that taken to a whole new level of technology and of interaction with the next generation of consoles as that content play becomes a bigger part of the overall appeal of these devices.
So the gaming becomes a subset of it's really what we used to call a set-top box, but now expanded, the role being expanded even further. I'm going to return to the social side in a few moments, but mentioning the Wii U and recognizing how I consume my entertainment now, how important and how do you see the second screen playing in the Sony offering?
It's a really good question. We haven't really seen what that second screen is going to do. Now the new PlayStation 4 controller has a touch screen on the controller itself, so we're waiting to see how that's going to function within games. But beyond that, you also have to understand that Sony is obviously a very big electronics company. Sony makes tablets. And with this renewed focus, on the Sony mobile side of the business, on Sony smartphones, it's not outside the realm of possibility that we're going to start to see, these big electronics companies start to try to weave these worlds together. It's already something Microsoft's trying to do with the Xbox and with Windows Phone and with Windows 8 and now the Surface tablets. I think one of the things we're definitely going to see when Microsoft takes the wraps off its next generation console is a real heavy emphasis on that second screen and on the ability to maybe use your Windows Phone device as a remote control or to use your tablet as something to control your Xbox. I think it's only a matter of time before those kinds of technologies get pushed to the forefront. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why we're seeing these next generation consoles now is because that second screen technology has gotten to the point that it's something that people, it has become an integral part of people's entertainment viewing experience.
Yeah, and when I think about the second screen, I mean, I don't know if this is the complete low-hanging fruit, but I just imagine how much better a game like a football game or a baseball game would be if I can choose what pitch I'm going to do on a screen that you can't see and be able to deal graphically with that, and especially for football plays, being able to make all those selections. Strategically, it would just make the games that much more interesting and that much more compelling.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, one of the, there's a great comic that I saw online where a wonderful idea would be to use the second screen in your hand. You know, if you're playing a Dungeons and Dragons type game, the screen, the person with the tablet becomes the dungeon master and sets the game rules and provides the quests that way. And the other people in the room with the regular controllers are the players. So, I mean, you just start to think, you know, once developers and studios get their heads wrapped around this idea of having a second screen and how it can enhance the gameplay experience, I think we're going to start to see new modes of gameplay. And I think that's what's going to be really exciting about this next generation of consoles.
Does Microsoft have a built-in advantage because they are a sole source for all of the different pieces of the puzzle? They've got the set-top box, and they have the computing operating system for all of the devices. That's all under the same roof, as it were.
It's certainly the opportunity is certainly there for them. Let's say that you know, with a family of devices that includes Windows Phone, that includes the Surface and Xbox and Windows laptops and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you do have a kind of built-in base. And if Microsoft can encourage people to adopt everything, you have to remember, people who are Xbox users really, really like their Xbox. And that's probably one of the reasons why, you know, the Xbox experience, that sort of tiled screen, really became a driving force for the design of both Windows 8 and of Windows Phone. And so I think you're going to start to see those worlds kind of blur together. And if Microsoft is smart, and this is a brilliant company that's lasted for as long as it has, you know, you have to expect that they're going to want to play on that advantage of meshing all of these things together to kind of turn if the Xbox becomes the connecting point for the television, you can stream stuff from your Windows PC, you can use your Surface laptop as an extra gaming pad, you can use your Windows Phone as a remote control. All of a sudden, this all starts to make sense to have everything standardized on one platform. Sony's obviously got a lot of stuff going for it as well. It makes TVs, it makes computers, it makes tablets. So I think you're going to start to see these video game consoles get moved more into the broader product portfolios of these companies going forward.
Might there be a breaking of the religion of for developers with the fact that they're going to have to all be more open because they're going to have to be talking to more devices? Is there a chance that game manufacturers are going to be able to launch games for multiple platforms more easily? I'm not saying that it's going to be more easy to write for this, but once they complete a product for one, that they're closer to having something that works on all of the different platforms?
It's a really good question, and you know, there hasn't really been a game yet where that has provided a compelling experience to the point that you can play it on, you know, for example, an Xbox game that has a component of it that's so good on Windows Phone that you rush out and get a Windows Phone so that you can play that component there, or so that the two sides can interact, or something at the same time that enables you to play it on a tablet and a PlayStation. I think we're moving in that direction, and I think that there will be tremendous appeal for whichever manufacturer. I mean, we always talk about games that are system sellers, games like Halo,
yes,
that encourage that people want to play that game so badly that they're willing to buy the console just to play that game. I don't think we've had a system seller from a platform perspective to say, you know, this game for the Xbox is so good that I want to have a Surface and a Windows Phone device just so that I can have every aspect of this game going on in my life. But it doesn't mean it can't happen. There's some pretty big promising games coming out there, and maybe we will finally see one of those.
Do you think there'll be a bit of an alignment with Microsoft having all of its eggs in its own basket? Do you see a relationship between a Google and a Sony, or a Google and a Nintendo, or Apple maybe stepping into the game?
It's really too early to tell. One of the things that's obviously hanging there in the background is that more and more people are playing iOS games. Apple is becoming quite a dominant player in the video game space. Obviously, they're different kinds of video games. You're not playing Call of Duty or other really, really big titles on an iOS device, but that could change. I mean, wasn't that one of the lines from the Steve Jobs book that he said that he had cracked the code on television? Well, maybe the you know, if there is an Apple HD TV out there, maybe there's a gaming component to it where every iOS game that you can possibly think of becomes something you can play on your television. And if that, you know, something like that happens, then all of a sudden Apple is a competitor in this space. I mean, obviously, this is all speculation. We don't know what's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's certainly room for other competitors to come in and change the game. It's just a matter of whether or not that's going to happen. Obviously, Android is a very malleable platform. There's a lot you can do with it. If Google, you know, wants to sort of move in that direction, we're already starting to see certain gaming devices that are built around the Android ecosystem. Whether or not we're going to see one that can, you know, compete with a PlayStation or an Xbox, I mean, that remains to be seen. Those are, you know, Microsoft and Sony have obviously invested very, very heavily in those divisions. Mm-hmm. They know that market very well, but there's obviously a lot of interest in video games and in the turning the console into the center of the living room. So it's obviously a space that other manufacturers are going to look at.
Now, is the clock ticking for Microsoft now that both Nintendo and PlayStation have announced?
You'd have to think so. The sort of the general sense within the industry and among observers is that there's the E3 conference in July is where we're going to start to see a lot of the new games, and that sometime between now and then we will likely see some kind of an event from Microsoft where they will unveil the next console. Obviously, Microsoft hasn't said anything. There's nothing scheduled as far as I know. But that's the sort of the general thinking is that we'll be seeing what's next from Microsoft, and it'll be very interesting. It'll be interesting to see how Kinect yeah. is integrated into whatever the next one is. It'll be interesting to see, obviously, how it talks to other Microsoft devices. But it's going to be a pretty exciting year for the video game space with a whole batch of new consoles.
Well, I'm a former Xbox boy. I certainly liked it when it came out, and that was the console of choice in our house for many years. But with my son off to university now, we haven't been doing too much console gaming. But I wouldn't mind seeing the new Xbox, and I'm probably going to give it a whirl when it comes out. But I'm not sure about anything before that. Matt, I appreciate your time. Matt Hartley is. We should mention your gaming site, because you guys have a whole site that's dedicated to gaming. The URL is.
The URL is financialpost.com/postarcade.
Postarcade. That is got it, it's just chock full of game related information. If we whetted your appetite, that's the place you can go to sate yourself. Matt, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. And you can also follow Matt, of course, at the Hartley on Twitter. Am I right?
That's the one.
Good man. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better. Question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Julian Saunders is, of course, our go-to man from London Drugs. He keeps us abreast of all the cool stuff that's happening in retail. How are you doing, Julian?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Steve?
I am doing quite well, I would say, back in Vancouver now. This week you wanted to talk about Microsoft Surface, which I thought was interesting because I thought Microsoft Surface was only available for Microsoft.
Well, when it first launched last year, it was only available online and at Microsoft's own stores, but they've recently released a version of it called the Surface Pro, and they've released the Surface RT and the Surface Pro to select retailers in Canada, including London Drugs.
Oh, well, that's good. Now, so for listeners who are confused, because I actually find the Microsoft lineup a little bit confusing, to be fair. The Surface and Surface Pro are Microsoft's tablets that are running Windows RT, their on-the-go operating system. So they're their tablets, which are the competitors for the iPad, I would say. It is probably the best way to describe them. Correct?
Yeah, it's the same size. It's a 10-inch tablet, and the RT version has a mobile operating system that's been available from other manufacturers as well since the release of Windows 8 last year. Mm-hmm. A couple of very popular tablets from Asus have been some of the most demanded Windows tablets yet because of the way it's easy to learn. It's already something you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. And now the new Surface Pro moves away from the mobile operating system. Still gives you a 10-inch tablet, but it's a full version of Windows.
Of Windows 8 running. Okay, so let's talk about the overall experience for Surface. Now, Surface, with the RT, Microsoft has created this tiled metaphor, which I guess the idea behind that is obviously ease of use and control. Are you finding that people are understanding it really easily when they take a look at the RT tablet in the store?
Once they pick it up and use it a couple of times, they find that it usually doesn't take that long to learn. One of the stumbling blocks was the email programs were a little bit harder to set up with POP3, but that has been resolved with a couple of new updates. So it's actually a lot easier to set up your accounts. Your social media sharing is all going through one app with the People app in Windows
yes,
8. So
yes.
Having all that on your tablet is a big plus.
Yeah, I always thought Microsoft did an excellent job with that. And it's as a matter of fact, it's very similar to the BlackBerry Hub, what I'm impressed with BlackBerry, with how they're pulling all this stuff together in their contacts area within BlackBerry. The bottom line as far as the social media, bring it all together so people know, is when you look at your address book, you don't just see the person's name, email, address, but it pulls together all the social media resources that it can find. So feeds from Facebook, feeds from LinkedIn, that sort of stuff is all pulled. When you call up a person and you're about to send them an email, you have all of this additional information about what's going on in their life, which can be really useful at times.
That's right, yeah, and it's something that people want to use on the go, too, so having it on your tablet just makes sense because then you're not locked down to your laptop or your desktop.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the Surface Pro, because now here's where I think Microsoft runs a risk. The fact that they've got a very similar looking tablet in the Surface RT and the Surface Pro, and they run two different operating systems, I'm concerned about that because I think people are going to have different expectations when they have their different tablets. And the Surface Pro, Microsoft is setting up to be really a notebook replacement?
It is, yeah. It's more of an Ultrabook replacement. It's compared head-to-head with leading Ultrabooks from Apple's MacBook Air, the Asus Ultrabook, and the Toshiba Ultrabook. So the specs inside of the Pro are the same that you'd find in a laptop. It has an i5 processor, 4 gigs of RAM, and even a full USB 3.0 port. So the advantage of having the specs that you would usually have in your computer give you a massive difference in performance. You can run full Photoshop. You can run AutoCAD. They've benchmarked it in very high-end programs, and it runs just as well as it would on a similarly spec'd laptop. So
now, when people are running those higher-end applications, they have to have it plugged into an external drive, I imagine, at that point, because 4 gig does not seem to be enough room to be running apps like that, or am I wrong?
Well, that's just the RAM. The storage is either 64 or 128 gigs.
Oh, okay.
Just like you find on the iPads. And there's also a micro SD card slot.
Oh, there is a micro SD. And yeah. Is it configured to accept 64 gig?
It is, yeah.
Okay, so you can have up to 128 gig. And how much of that, do you know how much is partitioned for the operating system?
You have about 38 gigs available to you on the 64 gig model. Mm-hmm. There is a recovery partition that's hidden from you that's about 14 gigs. Mm. And a lot of the more savvy customers are buying a 16 gig flash drive with their Surface, because you can easily create a recovery drive that you would keep externally and then delete the recovery partition inside the tablet.
And that would gain you back 14 gig of space.
Right, yeah. Yeah. It's actually very – that's the same thing they do on both Mac and Microsoft have set up for their computers. So it's very similar that way. It gives you a fallback, though, if your operating system won't load. Mm-hmm. If you leave the recovery partition on there, you can repair the operating system. So it has its advantages and disadvantages to staying on there. But for available storage space, it's the same as a 128-gig Ultrabook from either Apple or even Windows Ultrabooks would have. So the available space is still quite a bit.
You do have to be quite judicious about installing apps, which apps you choose to use and that sort of stuff, because it sounds like a lot of room, 128 gig. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe I'm saying that 128 gig just sounds like a lot of room. But but it really it gets eaten up pretty quickly with some of these apps.
Oh, for sure. There's little tiny USB flash drives that perform very well. One of them that I've used is the SanDisk Cruiser Blade, and they barely stick out at all. They don't have a big part of the stick. So if you're concerned with storage space, you could pick up a drive to run your applications off of if they're not used that often. But your main go-to applications would, of course, be on the internal storage.
So is that a challenge installing applications in Windows that run off of a drive as opposed to run off of the main storage?
You just pick their location.
Okay, when you're install? Okay.
Yeah, during the install, yeah. I have an Ultrabook with a micro SD card slot, and I've installed lots of apps onto a micro SD card just by telling it to go there.
Now let's talk a bit about pricing. The Surface Pro starts at $900 Canadian. What's that configuration?
That's the 64 gig model, and both of the professional Windows, both of the Windows 8 Pro Surfaces have a 1920 by 1080 screen, and they also come with a pen. The pen is a huge benefit for anybody that's doing drawing. They've had a lot of, because it's been out for a couple of weeks, they've had a lot of influential artists online using the Surface pen, and the pen on a $900 tablet can be your only drawing canvas. So people that draw daily cartoons have been using the Surface pen, and it's amazing. It's the multi-touch experience that everybody's been wanting on a affordable tablet. So let's, you always get the pen.
Okay, we're going to get back to the pen in a second, because that's, I think, a really interesting part of the story. But looping back, how much is the 128 gig Surface?
$999.
So it's only $100 more for $999.
Right.
Folks, get the larger one. now, let's talk about the pen, because the one disappointing aspect of using an iPad for me is in pen-based computing, is using a stylus. And the one thing that really excites me about the potential of the Surface Pro is the fact that Microsoft's OneNote might come back into my life. I'm not an artist, but I am a note taker. And when I used to use a OneNote with a stylus on a convertible tablet for years, the Lenovo tablet that had I guess it's a capacitive pen that you could take notes, but it was excellent for taking handwritten notes within Microsoft's OneNote, which is a similar product to Evernote, but a little more structured, a little more folder based. Can you rest your hand on the screen of the Surface Pro, the heel of your hand, while you're taking notes? That's the issue with the iPad, is as soon as your hand goes down, the iPad thinks that that's what you're trying to input, and it messes things up. So are you able to rest your hand on the Surface as you draw?
Yes, you can. Yeah, the pen is also double-sided and has the two buttons, just like the Wacom pens.
Oh,
yes. So it gives you all of them, and when you rest your palm, it actually knows where you're putting it too. So they've got a couple of apps that are more just for kind of to show off the technology. It doesn't move your mouse to where your palm rested. It knows that you've got a pen there, so it uses your pen input. But you can do things like change brushes with the swipe of your palm too. If you get used to it, it can really it can be a big benefit for somebody that maybe wants to switch colors of ink or switch quickly between apps. You can rub your palm on the Surface as well. So
that sounds pretty. I'm sure artists are going to be really interested. But what this represents to me is the chance of OneNote kind of reappearing as or finally becoming the app that it should be. I've always thought it was the best app that nobody ever knows about.
For sure, yeah, and Surface also has 720p webcams,
okay,
both on the front and the back. So you don't have to get just a tablet for the pen. You're still getting everything that you expect out of it. The Surface RT, the prices on those are a lot lower, but you don't have the pen. Mm-hmm. And the webcams are still high definition. So for people looking for a tablet without the, you know, maybe they're not as big of a user with Evernote and they're looking for something a little thinner, it still has a USB 2.0 port on the RT, but you get those nice 720p webcams and the same 10-inch screen.
And with Microsoft's investment in Skype, we're starting to see an awful lot of video conferencing type use for this sort of thing as well. It's working pretty well as far as that goes. The last thing that I want to ask you about is the keyboard, because it was a big splash, or the case cover, which has a keyboard built in, because right. Microsoft splashed that a lot as they were launching this product. So there's two different covers that you can get with this, with the Surface and Surface Pro, correct?
Yes, there's a touch cover, which ships with the RT version, so it's not an extra purchase. And then the Pro, they've removed the selection of keyboard out and let you pick which one you'd like to buy. And there's a type cover, which is actual keys. Now, the touch cover is very flush. It just has the letters basically painted on the cover. Very thin, but easy to type on. Mm-hmm. And it's also a front screen cover. So it they're easy to click in and then close the cover. And the type cover is a little bit thicker, but you can still close it just like you would an Apple Smart Cover. And it has real keys, but it's still very thin. So
and the difference is with the touch cover, you get no tactile feedback, but you get a small amount of tactile feedback from the type cover.
Right, and the they both have a mouse, which is something that a lot of my customers have asked for on the iPad.
Yes,
really? And both of them have a little trackpad, just like they do on a laptop. So.
Oh.
You can use a Bluetooth mouse if you're a big mouse user, but you have a pointer option available to you. You can use a mouse.
Oh, okay, which is good, I think, if you're word processing. You don't have to reach up to your screen and move insertion points or highlight for bold text or stuff like that, I suppose.
For sure, and or just use the pen, yeah.
Yeah, where that works. Okay, so the Surface RT, it starts at $400. Is it $400 that it starts at?
$599.
And then the Surface Pro, which actually, after having our conversation today, I'm a bit more interested in with the pen. They haven't done an awful lot of talking as much in their media. I'm looking in their on their website, and the pen doesn't come until the very end of all of their promotional side. I think they should be talking about that a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's very it is very nice when you go and get your hands on it. We have them on display at all of our London drugstores, so I encourage you to go in and put your hands on one for yourself.
That's a really good idea, especially if you're considering buying an Ultrabook or if you're considering an iPad. Having a look at the Surface Pro especially would be certainly well worth your time if you want to stay in the Windows world. Julian Saunders, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now from his home where he's sitting in his own chair as opposed to sitting in my chair, which you occupied last week, Dave Hathaway. How are you doing, Dave?
Your chair was more comfortable and had a much more geeky view than mine does.
Well, the studio is fairly geeky. Now, did you feel the source of power sitting in the chair? Sitting in the big chair.
I was so empowered sitting in that chair.
But you still didn't come up with the winning winning app. That was a Beeler again.
And Beeler's one with the rotating phone.
Yeah.
That, you know, that was just great, hands down.
Yeah, for those of you who are wondering what we're talking about, last week on App Wednesday, I was on the road, and Dave Hathaway and John Beeler were in studio, and Dave went and sat in the host's chair and just sat there and took ownership of the show. But the app that he's talking about that won the App Wednesday, because we always have these little contests, was this 360-degree vibrating phone app where you put your iPhone down on the table. And it makes it kind of goes Gangnam style. It makes the phone turn around for you through vibration, and then it takes a clear picture. And I'm just wondering how it gets the shutter out of the lens. They really did some engineering in that, in the software.
They really did. It was an amazing little chunk of, you know, software to watch as it sort of skated its way in a circle. I thought the phone was going to fall over, and I was sitting there trying to figure out, well, how on earth did they actually do this? But it certainly worked.
And the frequency of how it vibrated, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, well, the processing power in even our own little phones now, just
stunning. Even just in a little phone.
The reason I got you on, Dave, is, of course, you are the expert on all things email-related. And there has been, I guess it's been going on since about January, but there's been a little bit of a, I guess it's some sort of a virus of some sort, but there's a mail exploit going on with reference to Yahoo Mail. And it came to my attention because a friend of mine sent me an email, which I could tell was actually I received two in the last week, that I could tell they were hacked on. It wasn't their normal email that they would send out. It was sent to a random list of their contacts. It just had a link embedded in the email. And so I contacted them in both cases, and they didn't think that they were hacked. And their computers were clean of viruses. And indeed, this isn't something that's actually on their computer. But it turns out that it's their Yahoo accounts that have been compromised. Can you explain what's happening here?
Well, sort of. I mean, when you first mentioned it, I had seen one from a friend over the weekend. I'd seen one last week. And I remember seeing a couple sprinkled around in January. So I started to go try and take a look and see what had happened with respect to this. And I got probably 15 different stories that would tell the story in a slightly different way single time. So trying to pin down actually what's going on with it's proven to be difficult.
And not just that, but also coming up with a suggestion for people who are being affected is difficult.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the two obvious ones, well, one obvious one anyways, that's always recommended with something on any of these email hacks, no matter which services is immediately change your password as soon as you've heard about it, because that's going to stop it in its tracks. Now, if you find that one of the ones that I got in yesterday, I was able to recognize it because I know that that person does not use that email address ever. I've never once seen a piece of email from them on it. So when I started checking around a bit, I actually got the account for her because she had no idea what to do. So I said, okay, we're going to change the password. You're going to give me access to it. And then I went in there and I deleted all her contacts because there was a whole pile that were in there. And this is what that virus had used to send out to.
Was that email address book?
Right. So if that contact list was clear, then at least there's nothing for it to go out and send out again.
It wouldn't have had anything to send to. So let's just talk a little bit about what the kind of the overall situation. In the case of both the people that I know, they were exploited through an old Yahoo address, a Yahoo email account that they don't use anymore. Mm-hmm. They were dormant accounts that they had sitting there. They've since switched to Gmail or some other service. And so Yahoo, which is seeing its zenith now, it's dropping in popularity. It was in these Yahoo accounts. So there were actually accounts that they weren't using on a regular basis, which might account for the fact that the password was very stagnant on it and it's been sitting around for a long time. But despite the fact that they hadn't used these email addresses for a long time, the email systems were still fully populated. There was email sitting in their inbox or in their sent mail.
Certainly.
Plus, their address books were completely filled, right?
Yeah, and in spam boxes, spam inboxes as well.
Yeah, so they would have been receiving email in their spam inbox for sure. So the email accounts would appear, even though not much was being sent from them or nothing was being sent from them, they would appear to all intents and purposes to being active.
Yeah.
So even though there's very little that we can do other than the same recommendations that we do over and over again, don't open unsolicited email. And that means don't even open the email, much less click on a link inside.
Yeah, I mean, at all costs, avoid clicking on a link in an email unless you know or have a very good idea where it's going to, i.e. the person who's sending you it has just, you know, left you a quick little note to say this is this, or, you know, you could read this, something that's reasonably convincing. And a reasonably recognizable URL. Most of the URLs that come in that people do end up inadvertently clicking, if you look at them, you can see that they're pretty much nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. And you can also see that in this particular case that it was sent to a distribution list of people that had nothing related to all. I mean, I recognized a few of the names because they are friends of my friends, but I don't know those people. And there would never be a group email going to all of us together.
Right.
So other than due diligence, because your virus scanning software is not going to catch this sort of an exploit on your computer.
Yeah, because what's happening is the exploit runs as someone's clicked on that link.
Mm-hmm.
What it looks like happens is that it scrapes the Yahoo cookie, just a session cookie. So if you log into any Yahoo service, you've probably got a cookie lurking on your machine from it. So it takes that, and then it's that that it uses to go in and send against your contact list.
Now, at that point, their good antivirus software might stop it from getting mm-hmm. access to your system, but that's going to be I wouldn't rely on that 100%.
Yeah, I wouldn't. And the contact, well, the contact list itself.
That's the thing that some people can do something about. Yeah.
Yeah, the contact list is going to get off of the Yahoo system.
So the message, the lesson that I've learned from this is to go back into my old webmail accounts that I no longer use, old Gmail accounts, old Yahoo Mail, old Hotmail accounts that I don't use anymore, and either delete the account if you can. That might not be the easiest thing to do, but it should be fairly straightforward.
Sometimes, actually, I mean, well, that was the initial thing that I was going to do for the person that I helped out this weekend, was I was just going to go and delete the account. But try to actually delete an account in one of these services, right?
Very difficult to do. So in lieu of that, go into your address book and purge it. Take everything out of that address book so there's no addresses.
If someone does manage to find an exploit for that a year, 2 years down the road after you've completely forgotten about it, then at the very least they're going to have no contacts to send out against.
Yeah, the worst case scenario is anybody that's still sending email into that address, they might be able to gain access to that email. But other than that, if you can delete the account, try and figure out how to delete it. If not, at least clean out the address book. And that's really about all we can do. And this isn't, as we said, this isn't a case of your computer actually being infected. This is a virus which is kind of working off-site.
Yeah.
Is virus even the proper word for this? I'm not even sure. I don't think it is.
I think malware is probably the technical word for it.
Malware. Much better.
Yeah. Virus insinuates that it's something that's stuck on your machine.
Don't you miss the good old days when all the viruses were just like boot disk sector viruses and disks that we had to insert in our computer, and the only way to get infected was to have a bad disk?
That's right.
Those were the good old days, weren't they, Dave?
Yeah. Much easier then.
David Hathaway, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate your sage advice, sir.
Thanks, Steve.
And that's all the time that we have for this week's show. We just talked too much, Art. You and I never had time to gab too much.
Next week,
but we have to remind people, this is the last week to enter to win a sling box.
Two sling boxes,
a 500 and a 350. So drop by dottotech.com. Of course, there you can download the podcast. You can re-listen to those great Dottotech memories. And you can enter to win the sling box there. And there's also some new videos. And I've got a question up. I'm asking people how they're using Evernote. So if you're using Evernote in some really creative way, let me know. It can help me out for some stuff that I'm doing.
You can also check out our past App Wednesdays, where you can find the three that I won and then the one that John Beeler is proud that he won last week.
How many did I win?
I don't think you have.
I believe I have.
Well, you'll have to look online at dottotech.com.
If not, there might be some modification required. That's all the time we have. Thanks so much to my guests, to you, Art Factora, and to all you listeners. We will see you next week right here for more Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.